This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Coming up in the second half of our show, Hispanic Heritage Month is being celebrated. But what does it mean when we talk about a heritage that spans 20 different countries and cultures across South, Central, and North America? We'll hear from a fraction of those groups and hear how each shares their own slice of Hispanic heritage in South Florida. But first, get a plan and be prepared. It's the mantra we've heard countless times from emergency managers ahead of hurricanes and other natural disasters. That means have enough food and water for everyone in your family, get the medicines you need, the batteries for the flashlights, and fuel up the cars and board up the windows, and make sure you know where the nearest hurricane shelter is. Easy enough rules to follow if you're healthy and mobile, but when disasters like Hurricane Irma hit, these basic needs of daily life can become daunting or even insurmountable obstacles for people who are disabled or have other special needs. These are people with physical or intellectual disabilities, or those with acute medical needs that may require oxygen tanks, or those for whom hours or even moments without electricity could put their life in peril. And that's where special needs shelters come in, a last resort for those who, for countless reasons, find it next to impossible to evacuate. Emergency planners ask these folks to pre-register so they know about how many people to have room for. But many people who needed them during Hurricane Irma hadn't registered in time, and many sought shelter elsewhere. Here to talk about those special needs shelters and how they fared in Lee County during Hurricane Irma is Ben Abies with Lee County's he's Lee County's Deputy Director of Public Safety and the Chief of the County's Emergency Medical Services. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, good afternoon.
Also joining us today is Caitlin Eck. She's the preparedness planner from the Florida Department of Health in Lee County. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us, Julie.
We are talking about special needs shelters during Hurricane Irma. Did you have any special needs that you had to plan ahead for during the storm? Call in and share your story at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So Ben Abies with Lee County EMS. Residents in Florida expect hurricanes, and the idea of evacuating to a hurricane shelter isn't something that's new for powerful storms like Irma or Matthew, but the idea of special needs shelters may be new for some. Some might not know what it is. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
Certainly. Well, our special needs program that we operate in Lee County is a specific type of shelter for people primarily that have special medical needs or are electricity dependent. Primarily electricity dependent due to those medical needs. It may be an oxygen concentrator, electricity-powered nebulizer, whatever the case may be that qualifies them for classification into the special needs program. Those special needs clients are then categorized either back into a normal public shelter with some additional assistance, our special needs program with the special needs shelter, or in some cases they're triaged to local hospitals where they're allowed to shelter in place there at the hospital as well.
When they have more acute needs like that. So when did Lee County start realizing that they had to prepare for these kind of special needs? Has this always been around?
This is a program that has been in place for a number of years. I believe it's more than 15 to 20 years. We've had special needs evacuations during Charlie, during Wilma, also during, I believe, Tropical Storm Faye back in 2008. So these are programs that we have operated for a very long time. Certainly the scale that we saw during Irma was very different.
Yeah, that was very large scale. So Caitlin Eck with the Florida Department of Health in Lee County, can you give me an idea of who qualifies for a special needs shelter?
Sure. Like we just heard Ben say, it might be somebody who has a need for oxygen, consistent oxygen, or something that needs consistent electricity. But, you know, the special needs shelter, it's not skilled nursing. And so the type of person who qualifies for the special needs shelter as opposed to someone who might be triaged to go to one of our hospitals would be someone who's living at home with a caregiver, but largely is living at home and just needs a safe place to shelter but needs a little more assistance than someone in a general population shelter.
So it's not skilled nursing, though. That's important to keep clear.
It is not skilled nursing, no.
So beyond medical needs, does age alone qualify someone for special needs shelters? Like I'm thinking of mothers with newborns or senior citizens?
Nope. No, those would not be qualifying criteria for the special needs shelter.
So what do people need if they're going to take advantage of these kinds of shelters? Do they have to have a companion or a caregiver or anything else with them?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we ask that anybody who's reporting to a special needs shelter that they come with an able-bodied caregiver, someone who can assist you. Again, we're not able to provide skilled nursing to anybody in one of our special needs shelters, so you need to have a caregiver with you who can assist you in anything that you might need, such as, you know, getting up and down, going to the restroom, if you need assistance with your daily medications.
Like going and fetching water for you and things like that.
Anything like that. If you have a mobility issue, you know, you need to have a caregiver with you. We ask that everybody report with a caregiver. And we also ask that you bring your medications. If you have specific medications that you need, it's very important that you bring those with you to the shelter, because that's not, again, not something we can provide.
Well, there's not a pharmacy on
site. There's not a pharmacy on site. There's not necessarily a physician on site.
So what if you have somebody, though, that's, you know, all alone and they don't have a significant other or somebody that would be a caregiver? What does somebody like that do?
I will say we take it case by case. And we look at them and say, well, if they don't have a caregiver, if they are all alone, maybe they truly don't qualify for the special needs shelter. Maybe they can go to the general population shelter, or perhaps they need to be in the hospital, depending on their acuity. It is very much a case-by-case basis, and that's why we ask people to pre-register, so that we can really take a look at what is this person's needs and how can they best be met.
So Ben Abies with Lee County EMS. In Lee County, are all the special needs shelters pretty much the same, or do some of them have general purpose special needs and then others specialize or anything like that, or is it just mainly the special needs shelters and then the hospitals?
Whenever possible, we try and plan our shelters so that the special needs population is within one facility, and preferably that they have the total use of that facility. In some cases, and Irma was an example of this, we sometimes have to co-locate with other types of sheltering, and that was something due to the size of the storm and the potential for storm surge. We had to initially use East Lee High School in Lehigh Acres to be able to accommodate the numbers of special needs clients. So our preference is that we have one facility that is dedicated to that. But we also have to understand that not every storm is going to be identical, and we have to be flexible with our plans.
I think this one, I mean, we knew it was big for a while, and we knew that there were going to be people that needed to evacuate, and there were going to be a lot of special needs people. But I wonder how many people, Caitlin, maybe you might have the answer to this, how many people were pre-registered for these special needs shelters in Lee County?
So we had this is kind of an interesting number and one we're still still processing. We had approximately 1,000 people pre-register. In our shelters, we received about 600, a little over 600 people was our census between the special needs shelters. It was not only the largest shelter special needs shelter population we'd had in Lee County, but it was actually the largest census in the state. What we saw was, so again, we had about 1,000 people pre-registered and about 600 people that came to the shelter. Of that 600 people, only about 28% were pre-registered.
But you actually had fewer people show up than were registered. I think that's converse to what happened in a lot of other counties, though.
That I can't speak. That I'm not sure.
This is your county, but that's what I was hearing.
Yeah. In Lee County, I can tell you we had, but we had quite a few unregistered show up. So yes, we had fewer show up than were registered. But the great majority that came were unregistered.
Yeah. So Ben Abies with Lee County EMS, she was saying that you had about 600, and that's the same number that you've got. I mean, obviously in Lee County as well, that came at the last minute without registering.
Yeah, and that's not inconsistent from other storms. We would generally see the same numbers pre-registered. And in previous storms, we've only seen somewhere between 200 and 300 usually coming into the special needs shelter. Those were based on people that were pre-registered. So the number that we saw that actually came in that were pre-registered was not inconsistent from previous storms. What I think was a little surprising and something that we had to work with was the number of people that were not registered that still needed to be accommodated in that type of setting. That required a lot of flexibility both on the part of emergency management as well as the Florida Department of Health and our other partners. But when the time came to get the job done, everybody pitched in to make it work. It is very important that people understand that we make a lot of planning assumptions and we try and accommodate people based on those registrations. So registering each and every year, and again, the registration is only good for a year, registering each year is very important because it helps us anticipate that need within the community.
And then we also, I remember reporting before the storm that Lee County stopped taking applications for the special needs shelters. When did that happen? I mean, how close to the actual storm do you cut off that registration so that you know what to prepare for?
We cut off that registration at 5 days, and that's the 5-day cone that you see on TV and on the news. When that 5-day cone includes Lee County, then the registrations are closed. Again, we didn't turn anybody away. We worked as hard as we could to make sure that we accommodated anybody that had a need that came into either one of our general population or the special needs shelters. But again, for planning purposes, it is important that people, just like they would do before hurricane season, work on their checklist, work on their plans, that they also pre-register and make sure that they're starting that process with emergency management and the Florida Department of Health.
So no one was turned away. Did you have some people that ended up going from a special needs shelter or a general population shelter and then have to go into a hospital setting?
I think during every storm there are unique situations. I can't speak specifically to any of those, but again, it's the flexibility of the people that are running the shelters as well as our responders who work through those issues on an individual basis and make the right placements.
All right. We have a caller on the line, and this is Cheryl in Naples. Cheryl, what would you like to ask?
Hi. I am from Collier County, and my daughter has severe cerebral palsy, and she uses a ventilator at home. And we recently had our Irma experience in which we were unable to get our daughter into the children's hospital where if we lived in Lee County, she would have been registered. But because we live in Collier, we were registered for the special needs shelter in Collier. But because of the medical complexity of her care and her need for skilled nursing, we couldn't go to the regular special needs shelter. She requires hospital-level care. But we don't have that in Collier. And since the Children's Hospital, our regional hospital, is her hospital, I just kind of would like to know what you plan to do in the future for kids in that, you know, that go to the regional hospital who need hospital-level care who don't have that available in their county. So Collier County not having that hospital-level care available. We even tried with our neurologist and our nursing agency, both tried to work with the staff at Health Park to try to get my daughter in, but they just said they had too many children that they weren't expecting and they weren't going to take any kids from Collier. I'd like to know what can be done by our regional children's hospital to take care of the kids in Collier that depend on you for hospital level care.
Okay, and this is, we're talking with the Lee County officials, so I'm going to ask Ben Abies with Lee County EMS. Do you know anything about the cross-county, how the county makes things different if somebody's registered in Collier and how that works coming up into Lee?
Under statute, each individual county is required to operate their own program, so it would be up to the rules and how the program is administered within Collier County. But what I can say is that this storm, because of the size and the approach of the storm, impacting both the east and west coast, as well as, you know, such a large swath of the west coast of Florida, it presented a lot of complexities that, frankly, just completely overwhelmed the system. I think during a smaller storm, it's very easy to accommodate as many people as we might need to. With something of Irma's size, unfortunately, it meant that many of the resources were immediately overwhelmed just due to the sheer numbers of people that had to evacuate due to the storm surge threat. That's certainly something I think as the Children's Hospital evolves a bit, that's something that, you know, we can work on with Lee Health on how they would take patients from a regional perspective, how they would also make sure that they're addressing those complex medical needs that they treat regionally within the framework of the Children's Hospital.
Yeah, and this was that storm that was kind of one of those game changers. You know, it was the biggest one that we've seen in a long time. So I would imagine, and you can probably speak to this, maybe Ben or even Caitlin, about what kind of planning, what happens now that the storm is passed? Do you all sit down and look at, okay, well, this could have been done differently, and what goes on in the future?
Yes.
There'll be a Go ahead, Katie.
So I was just going to say, yes. So what'll happen now is I think it's really important to emphasize we're very much still working this event. We're in the recovery from this event. So it's incorrect to say that it's done now that it's over.
It's too soon to look back
it's
right
too,
now. We're still functioning through it.
Right. But I can tell you what'll happen next is we'll have our after action meetings. I know in my agency, we have already begun our after action meetings, and we're wrapping them up today where we're saying, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? What can we do next time? We've already adjusted our planning, the criteria that we use for planning for a storm. And then next we'll do that at the county level, and we'll work with all our county partners and say, hey, X, Y, and Z went great, but A, B, and C we need to work on.
Mm-hmm. It's a work in progress, obviously. And then on the other coast in Miami-Dade County, there was a staggering number of people who had not registered for special needs shelters. But as the storm got close, they found themselves in need. Here's a portion of a story from WLRN reporter Kate Stein, who spoke with Kurt Sommerhoff, Miami-Dade's emergency management director. Let's have a listen to that.
About 2,200 people were pre-registered before Irma. Basically the same number called the last minute for help. By the time some of them requested services, shuttle buses and designated vans and ambulances had stopped responding because winds had reached tropical storm force.
And then it's no longer safe for us to operate. At that point, we have to recommend to them that if you have any kind of medical challenges, you'd have to basically shelter in place, that their option at that point is 911.
Not getting to an appropriate shelter also creates problems for hospitals. Dr. Joe Scott is chair of the emergency department at West Kendall Baptist Hospital. During and after Irma, he says, people were coming in with issues that weren't necessarily medical emergencies.
But they needed assistance, whether they needed oxygen because they ran out or they needed to plug in an appliance. And frankly, the hospital was completely full. So we had to find extra space where they could basically cool off and use electricity or use oxygen, but they didn't exactly need high medical care.
Luckily, the hospital had enough extra oxygen, and staff cleared out a stretcher storage room and put couches inside. But Scott says that might not always be possible, and emergency planners need to take that into account as they prepare for the next storm.
Every one of us has an 80-year-old grandmother or grandfather, a tio or a tia, who is not going to plan to the last minute, should possibly or should be in a medical needs shelter, but in their 80 years has never been to a shelter and they're not going to start now. So even though we can plan and we can announce, the reality is these patients are there.
And that's the problem. Planning for an emergency is really difficult, but it's even more difficult when you're trying to prepare and there are still holdouts, like he just described in that story. Is there any way to plan for those holdouts? Caitlin?
Emergency management is a very imperfect science.
Well, I just think it would be hard when you're dealing with these individuals who are saying, I'm not going anywhere. And then at the last minute, they have to.
And we get a lot of that. I can tell you, there's you hear it all the time. I'm born and raised in Florida. I'm not going to evacuate. I'm not going to go to a shelter. People will tell you every storm they lived through. But I can tell you in this storm, those very same people were the ones who at the 11th hour, come knocking. And I think it's really important to emphasize, the way we get information in 2017 is a lot different than the way we were getting information during Charlie. So there's a lot more buildup. There's a lot more pomp and circumstance that goes along with all these storms. And it creates a lot of hype and it creates a lot of anxiety among the population. And so some people who in the past, they probably would have just stayed home and sheltered in place and hunkered down. Now they're getting anxious and they're getting more nervous and they're coming more and more to shelters. So it's very, very hard for us to plan for that unknown. That's a very big unknown that we contend with. And
it wasn't even until the very morning of, when it actually got to Marco that we knew, okay, well, then it's – well, actually after Marco that it came a little bit inland and we didn't get as much of that storm surge as we had anticipated. So it's – and those things can change like that. And when those hurricane force winds start happening, you can't respond anymore. You can't go out on the road. So it makes it kind of difficult when people are I'm going to hold out, and then all of a sudden, last minute. I mean, can you open a special needs shelter in the middle of preparations like that? I mean, how quickly does it take to turn around and plan on opening a new place?
So for a special needs shelter, it's much, much different than a general population shelter. It takes us a lot longer to set it up. So it takes us a good – whereas a general population shelter, you can to some extent sort of get staff in place rather quickly and sort of open doors. We have very specific requirements for a special needs shelter. There's very specific space requirements that we have to provide people with. And so it takes us a good 8 to 10 hours to set up and get supplies, you know, and then we have to find all the supplies to open up a new shelter. So when we talk about the fact that for this storm that we opened 2 shelters, that is no small feat. That was a tremendous amount of work and coordination among a lot of agencies in this county. And really the people of Lee County should be really proud of the work that was done throughout the entire response to the storm. But particularly the special needs shelter response was a tremendous amount of work and coordination. It is not quick. And so, you know, when we talk about, you know, the fact we opened the first special needs shelter was opened I believe it was the Thursday prior to the storm. And then the next one was opened, I think it was Saturday. And she made landfall on Sunday.
Yeah.
So you'll notice there's a good day between those. It's because when we had opened the first shelter on Thursday, and you'll remember she slowed down a lot. We thought we were going to see Irma on Friday or Saturday perhaps.
Yeah.
And then we wound up – it kept getting pushed and pushed. And as more people came in, we were like, oh – we need a second shelter.
People had more time to evaluate.
Mm-hmm. People
maybe
had more
I should get out.
Exactly. And so it took us a good day to get the second shelter set up.
So did that first one fill up?
Yes. We were at capacity in both shelters.
How many people? You had 600 people you said that
between
were.
Between
two of them. All right. Wow. Well, Collier County opened its shelters for Irma with 9 facilities. And by the end of the storm, they had nearly 30 shelters open. And did we have a similar story in Lee County, Ben Abies? Did we start with a smaller number and end up in the end having a lot more general shelters?
We did. But that's not necessarily contrary to plans. We would always open initially, do a first push with a couple of shelters, and then gradually open more shelters as the situation evolved, and a lot of that is due to the what we call evacuation timing. With our decision-making and the timing of evacuations, we would normally call for evacuations at barrier islands first, allow those people to begin their evacuation and move to shelters, and then start into other areas. We have the evacuation zones that are available that people should be familiar with. So we would progressively make those calls and progressively open more and more shelters as that those evacuation orders were issued and that capacity was needed to be able to accommodate the population as they moved.
What would you like to say about the importance of pre-registering for these special needs shelters? I mean, how vital is that to your planning?
Well, I think there's 2 things that are very important. Number one, the special needs program really should be the backup plan. We want people to plan well in advance of any storm and to make arrangements, if at all possible, to evacuate with family, with friends, or to go someplace safe well out of harm's way. So that should be the primary plan, is to get somewhere safe and preferably with family or friends who can take care of you. And in many cases, you'll be much more comfortable if you make those arrangements and can get out of harm's way in a reasonable amount of time. But if you're not able to, then we encourage people to register for the special needs program well in advance. Not only does it allow us to make sure that we've got a spot for everyone that registers, but it also helps us be informed of the specific needs of the people that will be coming to the shelters. One of the services that we provide in the shelters is a special needs oxygen program for people that are oxygen dependent. Being able to know the number of people that are oxygen dependent and those specific needs is very important for being able to order the right amount of resources to help accommodate those people once they get to the shelters.
And you mentioned earlier that people have to re-register every year. Why is that?
Well, we have a lot of attrition within the list. Also, people's needs change. So if you registered today, your needs today may be very different than your needs a year from now. So not only does it help us maintain a list that's current and that is that we know is current for this coming storm year, but it's also a list that is going to have specific information on that individual's condition and needs so that they can be properly triaged to the right shelter. You may be in a general population shelter this year, but next year you may qualify for special needs sheltering, and the following year you may qualify for hospital sheltering. So registering each year with the specific information on your condition and your specific needs helps us triage you to the right place and also anticipate the number of people that will have to be accommodated during a storm.
And Caitlin Eck, how does somebody do that registration? Is that all online?
Yeah, it's currently all online through the Lee County Public Safety website.
Okay. And how do you let people know about it? I mean, somebody finds themselves suddenly on oxygen. Do they get a handout when they're handed the oxygen tank that you need to get yourself registered if there's an emergency?
So the majority of the registration process is actually handled through Lee County Emergency Management. So, Ben, you might be better to speak to how you guys publicize that.
Yeah, Ben, I was just wondering, I mean, does that kind of come with the package when you find yourself in that you might be in that kind of need? Do you work through, I don't know, physicians groups to let people know that they do need to do that kind of registering?
We definitely do, and that's one of the most important things, finding those stakeholder groups and those partners who can get that message out, whether it's oxygen delivery companies, whether it is physician offices. We leverage a number of those groups to get that message out and to share that information. And again, that's just another way that we try and reach out to those populations to get them pre-registered.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Ben Abies, Lee County's Deputy Director of Public Safety and Chief of the County's Emergency Medical Services. Thank you, Ben, for joining us.
Thank you, ma'am.
Also, I want to thank Caitlin Eck, the Preparedness Planner for the Florida Department of Health in Lee County. Not an easy task, but we appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Coming up, it's Hispanic Heritage Month, and here in Southwest Florida, that can be celebrated by more than 250,000 people. Two Spanish professors will talk about some of the similarities and differences between the Latin American countries these Southwest Floridians come from. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.